Hi guys, I am finally home. This is my normal work environment, my normal office, which, to be honest, was starting to get a bit unfamiliar after 6 weeks going around the world doing the things in the different European places. That was an awesome trip. It was a massively successful trip. Everything that I sort of wanted to do and I guess the ways I wanted to run all of these events went absolutely to plan, which was awesome. A bunch of stuff went far better than expected. Some of the user groups I spoke about were actually very, very well participated, much more so than I knew, and much better run than what I was anticipating too. So I'm really happy with all that. It went exceptionally well, and now I don't want to go away again for a very long time. So my trip home, I think, was 30-something hours, sort of door-to-door kind of thing. So I went Amsterdam, Dubai, back to Brisbane, back down to the Gold Coast, and yeah, that's a very long trip. I got back here Sunday morning, it's Friday morning now, and even last night my sleep was just a mess. So these trips do have a very long tail on them. But be that as it may, I had a lot of time this week to actually do some writing. And there's a lot of stuff I wanted to write and a lot of stuff I want to talk about today. But I thought I'd start with just a few little things, and I'm just looking at my notes now that I have all my nice screens and nice microphone and everything back in as well. One of the things that got me this week, you know, like every now and then it just feels like all the crazies come out of the woodwork at the same time. And this week, they were there. So I'll give you some examples. Like this is the insanity of the week. Now, I'll give you three separate things, and one of them I'm going to talk about a lot more in detail towards the end of this update. So one of the things that popped up was a Computer World story on how to disable Windows Update and wait just to see if they work before maybe you install them yourself, as though this is something that mere mortals and normal people are going to start to do on a regular basis. And I sort of shared this story, and I think I retweeted Computer World and just went, like, what are you doing? After the whole WannaCry stuff and then the NotPetya stuff and the crazy prevalence of really nasty things which were exploiting unupdated software. So let's be clear about this. You know, this was exploiting things like Eternal Blue, the SMB bug within Windows, which was patched ages ago, yet somehow we still had this problem. So for someone like Computer World to come out and go, yeah, here's how you know, turn the stuff off, I just found unfathomably reckless. Now, this was a very recent story. It was the same as one of the other stories I'd shared in the past. I think I talked about it in one of my weekly updates. And there was some justification from the author about why this should be done. And a lot of people sort of piled on Twitter and went, this is probably not such a good idea. And there has never been a time like right now, after what we've had this year, that is better than illustrating how bad an idea it is. So there was that. Don't do that. Don't argue about it. If you're a big organization running a very sort of carefully managed standard operating environment, big desktop environment, and you're testing this stuff and you're rolling it out, that's one thing. If you're people sitting at home every day, people like you and me, leave the damn thing turned on. I'll move past that because I've done that to death other times as well. There's another very interesting one this week. Now, in case you don't know who he is, there is a bloke in India called Sachin Tendulkar. And Sachin is a cricketer. And if you're not from the subcontinent, Australia, UK, and a couple of other places around the world, you may not know what cricket is. It's not baseball. It is different to baseball. It is a massive sport in certain parts of the world and a massive loyal following in particularly places like India. And Tendulkar is an absolute megastar. Yeah, fantastic cricketer. Very, very good track record. And he is worshipped in places like India to the extent where he has 17 million followers on Twitter. So he's done quite well there. He's had a good innings, as we would say. However, during this week, he decided to tweet, and I'm going to read to you exactly what this tweet said. Now, keep in mind, this tweet was probably not sort of sat down and composed over a couple of beers. This would have been a marketing agency or his handlers somewhere who put this together. And the tweet says, have friends with many excuses to not get fit. Tag them using hashtag no excuses with their cities and mobile number, and I may call to give them a pep talk! Exclamation mark. So this is what it sounds like. What he's done is he said, hey, like all of these gazillions of people who follow and worship me, why don't you dox your friends and let me know what their number is, where they live, and in many cases, what their Twitter handle is. And it's cool, I'll give them a call and like everything will be awesome. And I saw this the other day and I went, like, this is crazy. I quote tweeted this and said, you know, like if ever you wanted to find a way of doxing millions of Indians, you'd just get a famous cricketer to send a tweet like this. And of course, when you read through the hashtag, a very large number of people were doxing their friends. Here's their handle. Here's their phone number. Here's their city. And I'm just thinking of all the trouble we go to try and protect this data. You then get someone with both influence and a massive following to come out and go, nah, just tweet it publicly. She'll be fine, don't worry. So I think I put out probably two tweets on this, and that was probably it. But it got picked up by the press, and they were sort of like, yeah, Australian security researcher Troy Hunt says Tendulkar, you know, maybe not making such a good tweet. And interestingly, he pulled it, or his handlers pulled it, or whoever manages his account pulled it, which was absolutely the right thing to do. So it's been pulled off air, and I thought, okay, that's that. And then yesterday, I had multiple people from India start to send me some very odd sort of tweets. And I'm going to read one of them to you, and this will give you a sense. So this person, as part of his dialogue of multiple tweets, which frankly were a little incohesive, one of his points here was, no one has the right to criticize that living God. So basically what he's saying is that Tendulkar is so highly revered that he simply cannot screw up. And consequently, no one has the right to criticize him. Well, mate, that's not quite how it works. And as I replied to him, I said, look, Tendulkar is arguably one of the megastars of the cricket world. And if you want to learn how to bat, go and listen to Tendulkar. If you want to learn about security and privacy, listen to me. And it's just such a simple thing, but it's just amazing to think that there are people out there that have so much got the blinkers on for the message of anyone, let alone a cricketer trying to talk about security, that they would just immediately accept it without even questioning. And as I was trying to say to the guy, I said, look, mate, ultimately he stuffed up, okay? He made a mistake. And I'm sure people don't like hearing that about their God, but, you know, that's what he did. He stuffed up. He knows he stuffed up. And then he deleted the tweet. You know, like, good on him. He's done the right thing. Because I get the fact that he wouldn't have thought through this and he wouldn't have known the consequences. But he did the right thing once he figured it out. Obviously, he's acknowledged it was a mistake, moved on, get over it. All right, so that was one of the crazies. One more crazy. And in fact, I think I'll just drill into this as I get to the end of this update. And this was around HTTPS. Now, I wrote a thing on HTTPS, which, again, I'll go into in much more detail towards the end of this update. But holy shit, some of the replies. some of the replies from people feeling like they're being forced into using HTTPS, feeling that you can't use it because of things like, oh, ad networks don't support HTTPS. That's literally one of the comments on the blog post. Through to people arguing that Cloudflare is useless, through to certificate authorities or those selling certificates from CAs arguing that free is useless and you really got to pay for it because that's the only way you can be secure. And I was up last night because, again, I couldn't sleep because of the damn jet lag, reading some of this stuff, just like absolutely head banging on desk, face palming as bad as you could possibly imagine. I'm going to come back and talk about that later on, though, because I want to save that till the end, because frankly, I'm going to need a while to explain the issues and then try and debunk some of the things that came up in response. Let me go and talk about something else first. I wrote a piece earlier on in the week about the prevalence of data breach cover-ups. And there are a few different sort of, I guess, things that have driven this. Now, obviously, one of them is the AA last week. So I spoke about the AA, the Automobile Association in the UK, in my update last week. And this, of course, is an organisation that leaked their data publicly back in April. Someone found it, told them, they cleaned it up, they followed process, which really didn't actually mean doing the right thing. So What they should have done, obviously, is notified customers. There is, I think, 117,000 unique email addresses in there. They never told people. And it was only once someone sent me the data and then it got airtime that they eventually went, okay, there was an incident, but no cards were impacted. And then they went, oh, later on. In fact, you know what? This was whilst I was at the airport at Amsterdam. So it would have been after my last weekly update. So eventually after this, they came out and they went, yeah, actually, there were cards in there. We just told you that there weren't. And obviously, look, good on them for coming out and eventually copping to it. And as I said last week, I wrote sort of about the stages of data breach grief. I said, they're going to have to do this. Like, it doesn't end any other way. And eventually they did. But clearly, they tried to cover it up and then they tried to downplay the severity of it after they were caught. And eventually, you know, as I said, everything comes out, it's all transparent, and you look kind of stupid. That was them. There are two other cases that I'm currently dealing with that are very similar to this. And I was hoping that one of them would be out and sort of live in the press today. It's obviously not today at the time of recording. It may be by the end of today, I don't know. But it's another incident where there was a leak. There was a lot of data in there, including financial data, including very personal data such as driver's licenses and passport numbers. And that is confirmed too. Have I Been Pwned subscribers have confirmed that. And they have not been notified by the organization. There are a few little nuances I don't want to go into until I have all the facts and it's actually out there. But this is another case. And then there's another one that I haven't even begun talking to people about, which is a similar sort of deal. And all three of these are cases where someone has found their data exposed. They've let them know and they've said, you know, like, do the right thing, clean it up, and obviously advise impacted customers. And the organizations have cleaned it up and then been dismissive of the individual who's reported it to them and ultimately not advised customers, not followed the right process and tried to cover up the incident. This is not cool. And frankly, I don't particularly care what the data breach disclosure laws are in whichever jurisdiction these organizations are running in. If they know that customer data has been exposed and that customers would be upset about that having been exposed, they should let them know. And if they're consciously going through this thought process of, we are not going to tell people because it's going to reflect badly on us, and inevitably that's the only reason they're not telling people, then they've got to be prepared for that to eventually be public. And if you're one of these companies who's going, well, we had some data exposed, some unauthorized third party got it, let's just not tell anyone for whatever reason, and that reason may include that we just don't think it's that bad or we don't think it's spread, be prepared that other people may have found it or that that individual will hold you to account. Now, I actually wrote this because there's a telco in India. We're back in India again for the second time today. Telco in India called Jio. And someone had stood up a site somewhere making Jio data available. Now, this is J-I-O, Jio. And a whole bunch of people went and used this service and searched and found their data. And they're like, yeah, that's my data. And Jio's like, nah, nothing to see here. You know, like, it's not authentic. And then you've got all these folks in India going, no, this is my data. I just checked it. It's real. And this was sort of the impetus for writing this piece, because you can't sort of stand up there on the one hand and go, this is not legitimate, whilst all these people are going, yeah, it is. If you really think that it's not legit, Geo, then explain why. Like, explain why you do not think that people seeing their real data from you, and this included, I think from memory, some of the internal identifiers or some of the identifiers a telco would have, like IMEIs and stuff like that. If you don't think it's legit, you've got to explain why. You can't just dismiss it. So I will keep an eye out for that data. Apparently it was being sold on the Alpha Bay Dark Market website, which incidentally disappeared about a week ago. So Alpha Bay was probably the primary dark market site out there, selling everything from guns and drugs to data breaches, Silk Road style. And of course, like Silk Road, that has now disappeared. That site is, for all intents and purposes, permanently gone. I was listening to the Risky Business podcast this morning, and they're saying it looks like the operators have shut up shop, run off with a whole bunch of Bitcoin as well. And that may not work out so well, given that there are a lot of criminals using that service and people who are in the business of doing nasty things who have now been ripped off money. So it would suck to be those guys. Oh, now, incidentally, just as I speak about Silk Road and dark market sites, I've got a book. In fact, I finished this one while I was away. So this book, American Kingpin. So for those listening and not watching the video, this is a really neat book. There's a few hundred pages in here, written by a guy called Nick Bilton. And this book is all about the Silk Road and all about Ross Ulbricht, who was the Dread Pirate Roberts, who was the administrator of the site, DPR. And it's about how the site sort of stood up and how it came to prominence and eventually how it was brought undone as well. And it was a fascinating read. It is one of the best books that I've read in a very long time. And I highly recommend you have a read of that. American Kingpin. All right. So that's data breach cover-ups and dark market drugs websites. And there'll be something else after Alpha Bay inevitably. So, yeah, that's just the way it works. Now, something else. Security Sense. So I did my Security Sense column this week. And I wrote about preparing for breaches. And really what I was trying to say here is that organizations put effort into preparing things or preparing for things such as disasters. So they have DRP plans. So, you know, what's our disaster recovery mechanism? What are our backups like? How do we roll over? How do we have redundancy? And they will go through exercises. I used to do this as part of my role at Pfizer in the past, where we go, hey, let's this weekend we're going to do a practice. Systems go down. How do we roll over to an alternate data center or whatever else it may be? And the premise of the post is that there is an organization called Avanti Markets. And Avanti Markets makes sort of food vending machines and stands where you can buy chips and things like that and, you know, soft drinks. And they've had an incident. They've found malware, as they would say, on their devices, which has been siphoning off all sorts of important personal data. And they've disclosed it really, really well. I will put a link into the notes for this particular weekly update that links through to their disclosure. And have a read through it, because it is detailed, it's transparent, it's honest. It reads beautifully, as beautifully as a report of "we just got ourselves seriously owned" can possibly read. And I sort of quoted a journalist in there. It's a journalist called Matthew Swartz, who I've worked with a few times before, who wrote this up. And he made the point that preparing for data breach makes the difference between the way, say, the AA handled their incident and the way Avanti Markets has. And I think it was just a really interesting sort of thing to think about in terms of how prepared is your organization. So let's say you listen to this, you go and you look at your email, and suddenly you realize via your email that you've been seriously owned, all your data is out there. How well equipped is your organization to deal with that? So for example, do they have enough information to be able to piece together what happened? Are they going to be able to even email people? So just simply emailing, let's say you've got 50 million people in your subscriber base, a million people in your subscriber base, that can be hard. So have a think about these things, because sooner or later, at this rate, it looks like just about every organization is getting owned in one way or another. So have a think about that. How prepared are you for handling a breach? Now, let's go on to this HTTPS thing. And in a way, this is nothing new. We've known about this for a while, but I hadn't written about it, and I thought I should actually put something down because I don't think a lot of other people know what is coming up. And this post went massive. It's had about 100,000 views in the last couple of days. It's been discussed on all of the Reddits and, you know, Hacker News, places like that, discussed and debated at length. But here's the premise of what's happening, and then we'll get into all of the sort of debates about it. In January, Chrome, and shortly after Firefox, started to say if you have got a login form on the page or a credit card form on the page and the page is served over HTTP, we're going to put a not secure thing up in the address bar. So Chrome actually says not secure. Firefox has a little padlock with a line through it. And what I actually quite like about Firefox is when you then click in the field, so the password field, a thing drops down beneath it. And it actually has a little message saying, look, this data may not be secure. The form could have been modified, etc. So they started doing that earlier on in the year. And this is all part of a push to make everything HTTPS. This is the undeniable future of where we will all be. HTTP will be an exception. So that was then. What's going to happen in October is Chrome has said, if you have any input field on a page whatsoever, so not just passwords, not just credit cards, let's say you've got a search field, or you've got a field, say, like on my blog, where you can enter your email address and subscribe to newsletters, any of these things, if you load that over an insecure connection and someone then clicks in the field, you get the same thing at the top, not secure. Now, this has really, really broad-reaching ramifications. So, for example, CNN. CNN loads over an unsecure connection. It doesn't redirect to HTTPS. It has a search box. If you click in the search box, you're going to get not secure. Lots of other places, like even one of Donald Trump's websites, I just tried to pick a variety of stuff. One of his websites has a subscription field where you can enter your email address, which for very sort of 90s kind of reasons, he or whoever built his site has decided to spell all lowercase with a capital M. It's like emailing like it's 1999. Anyway, so the point is there are a lot of sites which are going to start showing warnings because people haven't done their HTTPS sufficiently. Now, this is all part of the broader narrative of everything is going HTTPS, and the browsers are starting to hold people to higher account to do so. Again, in the update I linked to from Chrome, the announcement where they say this is coming in Chrome 62 in October, they flag once more that in the future, we will begin to show all non-secure origins as non-secure. Let me explain for a moment the significance of this. If you are on my blog watching this, and you look up in the address bar, you'll see a padlock. It says secure. If you're in Chrome, it's all green as well. And what we're seeing here is explicit confirmation that the site is secure. If you go over to CNN now, what you'll see is none of those things. You won't be told it's not secure. There is just a lack of any positive or negative confirmation about the security state. So in other words, you know a site is secure because it tells you it's secure. You know a site is not secure because it doesn't tell you that it is secure. You get it? So that's a really interesting insecure by default profile. Now what's going to happen is we're going to reach this parity where secure sites will say they're secure, non-secure sites will say they're not secure. And the thing that website owners have got to think about is how will they feel when people come to their site that's loaded over HTTP and the browser tells people that their site is not secure. This is where people started to lose their minds. Now, to be fair, most people are like, this is awesome, it's moving us forward in the right direction. But there are multiple different categories of mind losing that I'd like to get into here. Now, I made a couple of notes on some of these because there are some really interesting ones. Now, one of the bits of mind losing was that a couple of people said, Google's a bully. They're doing this for commercial reasons. Now, they didn't exactly know what the commercial reason was, but they're pretty sure it was for commercial reasons. They also weren't sure why Mozilla was doing it with Firefox as well, who is really quite the opposite of Google in many ways, in terms of the way they commercialize and track. In fact, they're very, very, very open and very trying to move the web forward in the right direction, and they've done the same thing as Chrome did in terms of login forms and credit cards. I'm not sure if they're doing the same thing with other input fields. It wouldn't surprise me because Chrome and Firefox tend to track pretty well together in terms of security controls. So, you know, this thing about it being some sort of ulterior motive, I think is absolute rubbish. There are a lot of very decent, very dedicated people building Chrome who just genuinely want to make the web a safer place. So I don't think there's any ulterior motives here. I think people are just trying to improve the environment for all of us. So that was part of it. So then, yeah, someone actually said, like, Google's a bully. It's like, yeah, they're bullying you into making your site more secure. Okay, well, interesting angle. So that was that one. The other one, and this is part of what kept me up late last night reading some of these messages as well, is that obviously one of the things that's happening with HTTPS and certificates these days is that there are more ways than ever to get it for free. So Let's Encrypt is the big one that's doing free certificates in the traditional sort of certificate model, insofar as there is a CA, you get a cert, it gets installed on your site. Obviously, they automate it, which is awesome. That's a big part of the value proposition. And then there's Cloudflare, which does the reverse proxy thing, and it automates a lot of this and gives you other things that a reverse proxy can. Now, these two things are both awesome, and they both do slightly different things, but they move us all forward towards the objective of HTTPSing everything. The incumbent CAs are not very happy about this, because they used to sell this stuff for a lot of money. They still try to sell this stuff for a lot of money. And if we take the likes of Komodo, who's still the number one CA in terms of volume out there, I tweeted last night that since January, so over 6 months, I think they've lost about 8% of their market share. And I'm just going by the total number of certs out there. So the total number of certs they have has dropped 8%. The total number of certs Let's Encrypt has increased like 50%. In the same period. So you can see why they're going to get pissed, right? So I pointed to a couple of things, both in the comments I made and also on the Twitters last night whilst I was jet lagged. And there's some interesting kind of arguments here. So particularly in the comments on my blog post, some guy who, based on his Discuss account, just seems to be spamming various message threads about their services as a reseller of certs has just made the most bullshit arguments about things like Let's Encrypt is not, or free doesn't mean secure. And I'm like, yeah, but no, you're right, but commercial doesn't mean secure either. Like these have, that support the same cipher suites and the same protocols, and they basically work the same way, whether they're free or commercial. And their arguments about things like, look, Let's Encrypt is bad because it's helping phishing attacks, because you can stand up a phishing site and then go and get a Let's Encrypt certificate. And mind you, you can go and put Cloudflare over your site as well. And in both cases, if that sort of behavior is discovered, then the various operators will revoke certificates or kill services. But it's a fair point insofar as we do now have sort of more phishing sites behind HTTPS. However, this is not what HTTPS is there to stop. You know, HTTPS is there to make sure that you can have a private, confidential conversation with a service and that your data doesn't get modified and you know you're talking to that service. Now, that service could be run by the devil, right? But that is a separate issue to actually securing the communications layer. And for these commercial CAs that are arguing that this is a bad thing, they're sort of conflating the issues here of privacy of communication versus the, what's the right way of putting it, the morals and objectives of the site that runs behind it. So they're missing a really important piece of the picture here. And obviously they're pissed because they're losing money, but they're kind of losing their minds in the way they explain this. And just to sort of give you an example of how much they're losing their minds, when I wrote about Let's Encrypt last year, and in fact, I said, look, I don't think you should use Let's Encrypt on an Azure app service because it is not there as a first-class citizen, and the way you've got to do it is with an external site extension and it's very flaky and fragile. Love Let's Encrypt, wouldn't put it on an Azure app service. But in that post, I gave an example of how Komodo dealt with Let's Encrypt. So Komodo tried to trademark the name Let's Encrypt, because obviously they were so worried about what was going to happen to their business, they tried to screw over the guys who were doing it for free and trying to make the web a more secure place for everyone. And then just to make it even worse, the CEO, who was one of the people arguing last night about the importance of paying for certificates, then made a comment, which is still out there, about how can you prove it was Let's Encrypt who made up the name Let's Encrypt? this was his argument for why he should be able to trademark someone else's brand name. And this is the sort of organization we're dealing with when we talk about commercial entities trying to sell certificates. So there was all that. Now, the other thing that came up as part of this, and I alluded to it at the start of the update here, was discussions about Cloudflare. And look, it's often the same people who jump up and make this argument where they say Cloudflare is basically useless, or in some cases they say it's even worse than useless. I'm not quite sure how that is. Because they can serve up an HTTPS connection between your website and one of their edge nodes. And they've got 115 edge nodes around the world. So if I'm here, I'm connecting to, say, the one in Brisbane, which is up there, you know, 70 kilometers or something away. Now, I can see HTTPS there. I don't know whether they're doing HTTPS from that edge node through to the origin server, wherever that may be. And what they're saying is that because there are websites where that's not done over HTTPS, you shouldn't trust Cloudflare and it's reckless and you shouldn't be using this stuff. And this is just the most sort of nonsensical argument that misses so much of the importance of HTTPS. It's just unfathomable that people still take this line. But let's go through it anyway. And I'm going to link to a blog post that I wrote called Security Absolutism, or Unhealthy Security Absolutism, I called it. And basically what it is it's people saying, if it can't be perfect, you shouldn't do it. And they're like, here we are in this situation at the moment. We'll take a scenario. Someone has a blog, and the blog is all over HTTP. And then Cloudflare comes along, and they say, hey, look, if you want to wrap Cloudflare around it, we will give you HTTPS from, say, let's say from my mobile device, through to one of our edge nodes. Now, what that means is that if I'm at a hotel or an airport or someone like that, and they're intercepting my traffic, they're often injecting messages into there, you get those captive portals, can't do that anymore. If I'm on a Norwegian Airlines flight and they like to put the little airplane across the top of the page to show you how far you're flying across, which is intercepting your traffic and modifying your page, they can't do that. If someone hijacks my DNS, which often happens with these crappy consumer grade routers where they've got CSRF vulnerabilities and things, that doesn't work either. If someone has a Wi-Fi pineapple or a rogue hotspot, can't do that. If an ISP in a state such as Tunisia or Iran intercepts traffic, as we have seen many precedents of, can't do that either because there's HTTPS all the way. So it solves all of these problems. And to be clear, it's HTTPS all the way to the Cloudflare edge node. Now then, and actually let's just fill in a couple more bits there. Because it's HTTPS and it's because it's via Cloudflare, there's also HTTP2, so we get this file stream of asynchronous requests, which makes things much faster. It means you can use other things like Brotli compression. It means you get a bump in SEO. It means you can use features in the browser that are going to shortly be deprecated if you're serving content over HTTP. And that's another story I'll go into another time. So you get all of these things, and then they're saying, yes, but because Cloudflare then over the internet backbone, where your threat actors are things like nation states, because they could possibly intercept it, it's useless. And you're just going, well, no, it's not useless. What it does is it takes us in this sort of spectrum of between, say, 0% and 100%. It takes us to like 90 or 95%. You know, it kills that much of the risk. But because there's that last 5%, it's crap. You know, like that is the argument. And that just doesn't make any sense. Another reason it makes even less sense is that you can secure every public segment of the network. If you go to Have I Been Pwned, you're getting a secure connection from your client, such as my phone, all the way through to Cloudflare. Cloudflare is a reverse proxy. They sit in there, they decrypt the traffic, they cache things, they optimize stuff, they stop nasty threats, which, by the way, is a positive security attribute. Then they re-encrypt and they communicate securely from the edge node all the way through to the origin. So every single public network segment is encrypted. The only bit that's not is the bit in Cloudflare, which you don't want to be encrypted because you want them to be able to do positive things with your traffic. And yes, it means you need to trust them, but I need to trust my ISP too, who in the case of Have I Been Pwned is Azure. So those people making this argument are just doing everyone damage. They're doing themselves damage because, frankly, it looks a bit stupid to make that argument that it's useless or that it's even worse than useless, as I said. And it also does damage in that if they're responsible for sites and they're not able to get HTTPS all the way through, and there are still plenty of places you can't, even my blog, I can't serve a valid certificate from Ghost Pro. They do not have the ability to upload a certificate. I'm still making an HTTPS request from Cloudflare through to Ghost Pro, but it can't verify the certificate because it's getting a Ghost Pro certificate that's not valid for the TroyHunt.com hostname. So there are all these scenarios where we can't yet quite do it perfectly all the way from end to end. Let's not throw it out altogether just because of that. You know, use a bit of common sense. So I'm just looking at my list here of things, and there's one other one, which is the sort of domain validation versus extended validation certificate. And frankly, I think this is a lot more nuanced than what you may actually think. So the likes of Cloudflare and Let's Encrypt, when you get these free certificates, they're domain validation. So they make sure that you own the domain, and that's the only criteria. That's why you can have PayPal phishing sites that have certificates, because all someone has to do is that they demonstrate that they own the domain. Extended validation, you've got to prove who you are. So if you go to Have I Been Pwned, you'll see it says Have I Been Pwned, and then it says Troy Hunt in brackets, and then it says AU. So you've got a really, really high degree of confidence who it is. The thing is, though, in terms of what people need to see in order to enter sensitive information into a site, arguably the padlock gives them greater confidence. But equally arguably, an extended validation certificate isn't needed in order for them to enter that information. And what I mean by that is that people are accustomed to looking for the padlock. To them, that's the sign of secure. It's not that they're like, hey, I'm going to go to this site. I was going to enter sensitive information, but no, I don't see an EV. It doesn't work that way. And in order to illustrate the point, check out Facebook, Twitter, and Gmail. None of them have EV certs. And frankly, one of the primary reasons I have it on Have I Been Pwned is I just wanted to do it to see what was involved and to write a blog post about it. There are a couple of other nuanced reasons I've done it on Have I Been Pwned. I actually talk about in the blog post about journey to an extended validation certificate. But really, that's it. And again, we've sort of got the CAs kind of clutching on with their dying claws to things like EV, because that's the only way they can kind of stay relevant when someone else has come in and turned their business model on their head. When I think about it, it almost feels a little bit like the Uber versus taxi thing, where it's like the taxi model just got so comfortable yet so crap, and someone else came along and just did a much better job. And I know there are people that don't like Uber for other reasons, but in terms of the way it changed an industry, it feels a little bit like that, where the incumbents just sort of got caught resting on their laurels and they were very sort of happy doing the thing they'd already always done, but really providing a kind of crap service. And then someone's come along and just done it a lot better. And rather than the CAs lifting their game and doing the right thing, they seem to be intent on just bad-mouthing the new player. I have a thought on something I'm going to write a little bit later on. I'll see if I can materialize this into a cohesive argument. But keep an eye on that. I think there will be a lot more discussion about HTTPS and about incumbent CAs in the months to come. Okay, so that was it. And I know this has gone really long as well, but particularly that HTTPS thing has just been a really, really big week for me. Last thing, Terbium Labs is sponsoring my blog again. They have been there in the past. They make a product called Matchlight, which does a whole bunch of dark web mining of your data. And companies use them to find out where their things have appeared on the dark webs and in other places on the internet where they would prefer it not to be. So big thanks for those guys. Again, they're a repeat sponsor. So I'm really, really happy to see that people want to keep coming back and sponsoring. I'm booked out now, I think, until October, and then a lot of spots booked out through to the end of the year as well. But I would love to lock any new ones in well in advance because it is working so well. So that was it. Thank you very much for watching this, probably the longest one I have done. I am going to still be doing these from home for the foreseeable future. The next time I go away will actually be around about the middle of August when we've got the NDC conference down here in Sydney. And then I'm going to have to go snowboarding for a bit as well. But I will be doing my updates from both those locations. Thanks very much for watching back in my home office.